Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. What's the Republican governor's influence likely to be with the GOP-controlled state legislature? The 2018 legislative session begins tomorrow, and that's just one of the things our political reporters will be looking at during the session. Joining me in studio for a preview of it are Joe Manis and Jason Rosenbaum. Joining us by phone from Jefferson City is State House reporter Marshall Griffin. Happy New Year to all of you.
Yeah, thanks. Happy New Year to you.
Well, it doesn't take long for the legislature to get going once that big ball comes down, does it, on the first?
Nope.
Okay, let me put the same question to all of you, and I'll start with you, Marshall. What generally will you be looking for from this legislative session?
Aside from the budget and aside from a lot of the top issue bills that will be coming out, observing how the working relationship goes from here between Governor Eric Greitens and the Republican leaders, it was a bit of a rocky rocky journey at times in 2017, and there will be a little bit of rockiness right off the bat, especially in the Senate when it comes time to confirm the governor's choices for the State Board of Education. Senator Gary Romine has promised to filibuster and do whatever he can to make sure that those appointees don't permanently sit on the State Board of Education. So we could see it'll be an interesting 2018 to see just how the relationship goes from here, if it gets better, if it gets worse, if it's just kind of more of the same.
Joe, you've already written about that.
Now, but I think this could bleed over into some of the issues. For example, as our listeners know, labor unions succeeded in getting enough signatures for a referendum to temporarily block enforcement of the state's new right to work law, and they're hoping to overturn it. Now, it would automatically go on the November ballot unless, I mean, referendums are the one case where it's the General Assembly, not the governor, who can change the date. The General Assembly has to act quickly if they want to do that. Some of the Republican leaders have talked about it. But with all this other stuff going on, I mean, the right to work was the one common point of agreement between them and the governor. Some of this may get caught in the crossfire of the fight between the governor and the General Assembly over Board of Education, other stuff. And so I'm really curious to see if some of their efforts to change that, go after some other labor protections, gets kind of caught up in the fight between the governor and the Republicans.
Some of the legislators want it in August because there's a lower turnout and they think they have a better chance of their side prevailing.
Yeah, but, well, actually, some say that it might be easier for the labor to win in August. There's that perception. Then there's one of the reasons they want to move it is they think if it's on the November ballot, it helps Senator Claire McCaskill and State Auditor Nicole Galloway, who are both on the ballot, the two last Democrats holding statewide office. But if it's in August, there's the question of, A, does labor – is it easier for them to overturn it and protect, block right to work? B, does it set up momentum going into November? I mean, because you have to look at the national picture as well. I mean, right now, I mean, the Democrats look somewhat in good shape nationally, but that can change in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. But does that kind of create some sort of momentum that the Republicans don't want? Might there be some primaries that might get affected by this? I mean, it's a little more complicated than just August versus November.
Jason, what are you looking for?
Well, I'm interested in the results. I have written numerous stories about the relationship between the Republican legislature and the governor. But for everyday people, I don't really think the process to get to the policy matters that much if, for example, labor unions' power is constricted further, or if health care isn't delivered to the poor, or if the roads in the state and the bridges in the state aren't getting funding for major repairs. If any of those things actually happen and those policy items are achieved, I don't know if the infighting and the sausage making that leads up to it will be that relevant to everyday people. Now, if a lot of the priorities that the Republican leaders set forth in the beginning don't get done and the infighting ends up derailing it, then it becomes an issue. But I'm not convinced at this point it bleeds over into policy. It didn't necessarily happen last year with, you know, restricting abortion on labor-related issues, on restricting lawsuits. I do think it's going to become a major problem in getting the governor's appointees confirmed. I think that's pretty much acknowledged by everybody.
Very quickly, what is the source of this friction between the governor and the Republican-dominated legislature?
I mean, I think the source primarily is the governor directly attacking the legislature and legislators. I don't think someone like Senator Gary Romine or Senator Rob Schaff appreciate when they're called out on a particular issue by name, which they were last year. And I don't think that there are people that aren't called out that appreciate that approach. The thing is, there's never been a Republican governor who came in office with so many Republican legislators. So when the legislature and the governor are on the same page, they can pretty much do whatever they want. If they wanted to buy Illinois for $50, they could do that. But as long as the sniping comes, at least from both sides, the dream of a unified Illinois-Missouri state remains elusive.
Yeah, there are some Republicans who contend that the governor's staff, some of the younger members who are more involved in stuff, are still in campaign mode. And these ads against fellow Republicans didn't help things. But from the get-go, he was, even early last year, was at odds with Republican leaders over different things. It's just that it amplified as the months went on. Mm-hmm. He's also out of town a lot. I mean, because he does have a high national profile. And there are some Republicans who may resent that. There are some who feel that he doesn't pay enough attention to the state's problems. Others say that's unfair. But the bottom line is all that – I mean, Jason's right. If it's just infighting and still the same stuff gets done, the average voter is not going to care. Okay. If it derails stuff like the home health care services for thousands of elderly in the state that got cut off a few months ago – And many of them are in rural Missouri, Republican rural Missouri. Mm-hmm. If stuff like that isn't fixed soon, then you start seeing an impact.
Anything to add to that, Marshall?
Just buckle your seatbelts because there's, like I said, those details where, especially where these things are impacting rural Missouri, that could lead to some, you know, to some real battles as far as is Greitens really, you know, paying attention to. The needs of Missourians, and are his eyes elsewhere, and not where they need to be among the people who elected him.
Marshall, what are the chances, do you think, of legislation to reduce the income tax, increase the fuel tax?
Well, the answer to that is yes. to put it, I think there's a very good chance that some form of tax cut will pass because despite their differences, Greitens definitely is in favor of smaller government, and most of the Republican leadership are as well. Now, in its current form, I don't think the proposal that's being pushed by Representative Fitzwater and Senator Igel will survive. I think I think there will be some backlash against the proposal to raise the fuel tax, because even though it's very low now and would still be pretty low if it's raised by 6 cents a gallon, it's still a tax hike, and that's still very politically unpopular, especially in an election year. My opinion is that's perhaps was put in as a bargaining chip of some sort. But, I mean, it's too soon to tell, but that's at least my initial impression.
Joe?
Yeah, I think there's already some talk they want to try to cut income taxes further or maybe make another attempt to get rid of them because certain donors, that's what they want. But see, the backdrop of all this is the federal tax cut measure. That could have a dramatic impact on Missouri's income because the state income tax filings and the federal income tax filings are linked. So there's been projections that it could be hundreds of millions of dollars a year that the state could lose over this. Now, may end up that may be an exaggeration. But the bottom line is if you have that climate where there's projections of a lot less money, and then you're talking tax cuts on top of that. You've got some swing voters in the middle that may be a little concerned about that. And from everything that I've heard from every Republican I've talked to who's seen polling is saying that they're just being killed in the suburbs right now. And The suburbs in Missouri are where elections are won or lost.
Jason, there's some support, as I understand it, for ultimately eliminating the income tax altogether. I wonder if anybody's looking at Kansas during this discussion.
I believe to eliminate the income tax, I guess they could hypothetically do that through the legislature, but I would imagine that they would probably have to put a ballot initiative up there. I mean, they wouldn't have to, but they have to replace it with something. Yeah, and usually the popular idea is to replace it with a higher sales tax. And in that instance, if you raise the sales tax pretty dramatically, you would have to put that on the ballot because I think it would fall within the Hancock Amendment. I could be mistaken on that, Joe.
Well, I was one of those who's floating it. And so I think it would be interesting. And now, because Missouri is so below the ceiling set by the Hancock Amendment, there may be some tax changes they can do without going to the vote of the people. But there may be others where they do. I think that still has to be worked out.
The other thing we have to point out is that the Missouri legislature passed a tax cut 3 or 4 years ago that hasn't completely gone into effect yet. I don't know if we're on year two or year three of this.
Yeah.
But there's still at least 3 more years of this tax cut being eased in, and that's not going to be a completely painless situation for revenues. It could be less painless for actual people if they get more money. But I think that throughout this entire debate about tax cuts, we need to point out that Missouri did cut the income tax pretty recently. It just hasn't gone into effect completely.
We have to take a break, but Marshall, is this going to be categorized as a major issue during this session?
Probably will be one of the top five, I would say that. At this point, it's too soon to tell if it'll be the number one or two issues, but I'm imagining it will be at least in the top five.
Okay, well, let's take that break now, come back, and continue our conversation. We're previewing the 2018 Missouri legislative session, which begins tomorrow. My guests in studio are Joe Manis and Jason Rosenbaum, and Marshall Griffin, from whom you just heard, joins us by phone from Jefferson City. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation and previewing, I should say, the 2018 Missouri legislative session, which begins tomorrow. In studio with me are Jason Rosenbaum and Joe Manis, our political reporters, and State House reporter Marshall Griffin joins us by phone from Jefferson City. Joe, let me come back to you. In the last day or two, you've been writing about kind of previewing the session, and you hit on a number of hot-button issues, which always seem to come up, abortion. Marijuana. What else do we have there? Gun rights, I think, was one of the ones that you mentioned. What are you looking at here?
Well, aside from the ones that we've already mentioned, you know, the taxes and labor, and I know that there's some others who have written elsewhere that they don't think abortion and guns will come up. Abortion and guns, right. In Missouri legislature always comes up. It may be May, it may be April, but it'll come up. And in part because, especially in election year, they want to – Republicans, who have a huge majority in both chambers, want to have something to show their base. Because, as I said, especially with the national forces going on, they need to get their base revved up. Now, one of the gun proposals that I was particularly intrigued by would allow people to carry guns into church or synagogues without letting the – religious leaders of that church know. So in other words, the pastor wouldn't know who in his pews are armed. And so that one's rather intriguing. And there have been bills filed every year for the last few years to outlaw all abortions or reduce it to 6 weeks, which would trigger court cases. They're still fighting over some of the court decisions from last year that appeared to expand access in Missouri, but the legal fights have prevented some of the new clinics from being opened. So there's that still going on as a backdrop. So that's something I'll be watching for in the spring. But the budget fight, as Marshall mentioned, because of the tax issue, and by that point they should have a sense of the income, I think the budget fight may end up consuming a lot more oxygen than last time, especially if there's all this fallout from the federal tax cut bill.
Marshall,
if I can, Go ahead.
Go ahead. You wanted to add that? Go ahead, and then I'll come back.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and as far as taking up time with the budget fights and debates, hopefully the Greitens administration will get that ball rolling a little bit earlier this year, so that there's not the worry about the deadline, about the potential special sessions. Because we remember last year he didn't unveil his proposed budget until early February, which was a bit unprecedented, and about 2 or 3 weeks later than governors normally do that. No word yet on whether they're going to do it this month yet, or if he's going to repeat the way the timetable that he used last year.
Marshall, my understanding is that several hundred bills have already been pre-filed. I know you haven't read every one of them yet, but basically—
Not quite finished yet.
Not quite finished. What you do know about it, what does it tell us, the pre-filings tell us? Anything significant there?
Well, for starters, they tell you what didn't make it last year, the prior year before. A lot, because there are some bills that come really close and just fall short, either because they don't take up the time on the final day, or maybe they got vetoed. One example, and this is I'm pulling from Governor Greitens' State of the State address last year when he talked about reducing regulations, and he talked about the hair braiding bill, with a proposal on reducing the requirement that a hair braider also have a cosmetology license. That bill fell just short on the final day. It's back again. It will be back again. It has been pre-filed. And there may be an earlier push this time around on that and other bills that are seen that would take on regulations that Republican leaders say stifle business growth.
I'm guessing that the vast majority of the public in Missouri is not too concerned about hair braiding legislation. But while we're on that subject, there's another one that's getting a lot of attention. Jason, I'll go to you on this. Why is this big deal? Why such a big deal over the residence of the Attorney General?
Well, because Attorney General Josh Hawley is running for the U.S. Senate, and the Democrats want to attack him both his official duties and what he says on the stump. I'm not sure if it's the Missouri Constitution or Missouri statutes, but the Attorney General is required to reside in the capital city. He's from Boone County, Missouri, which is like 15 or 20 minutes away from the Capitol. So at first he was not going to move, and then he has an apartment there and in Jefferson City. But then he voted in a state house race in Boone County, which caused some kerfuffle. I mean, I'm not naive. A lot of this is political. But from a practical perspective, I don't really know why Missourians should care if Josh Hawley lives in Boone County or Cole County. Maybe he's violating that aspect of the law, and maybe a judge would say you have to uproot your family and live in Cole County. But regardless of whether he wins or not, I don't really think it means very much of how the office functions. If he lived in Tarkio, Missouri, that would be a different story. But he's so close to the Capitol that I really question if the office is hindered by him living in one place or another. Hence the reason I think that's why they're going to try to change the law. Whether it's successful or not, I have no idea.
Yeah. Or if the Capitol were still in St. Charles, Missouri, and he lived, say, 20, 25 minutes away in St. Louis County, but still in the metro area, would it be an issue?
But perception matters. And I'm not taking sides on this, but the fact is, for example, the Republicans have been going after Nicole Galloway for weeks about her reticence to turn over some text messages on her state-owned phone. Okay, the Democrats have countered the fact that the governor's been using this text device that he and his staff that makes the text disappear shortly after they're read. Then you've got the thing with Hawley over whether or not he violates the state law because he doesn't live in Jeff City. Some people would use that to sort of build a case that against a person's character. I'm not saying it's right or not, and I agree with Jason. It doesn't mean that his office is run bad or not, but it does make it more difficult for his party to, let's say, go after Claire McCaskill over something that maybe equally, they're trying to bring up the fight over the late tax payments on her family plane of several years ago. I mean, it makes it more difficult for that to work when they can say, yeah, but look at him. When both sides are pointing their fingers at each other for these kind of things that, as Jason points out, don't really have a lot of impact on the operational stuff, it does, though, make both candidates look less than stellar on the character front. And that's really what this is about.
But to be candid, even though there's probably going to be literally tens of millions of dollars spent by both parties to exemplify the flaws, I think that money is kind of worthless compared to what voters think of the president. And if it, you could spend all the money in the world, and if Trump's approval ratings in Missouri are at 20%, McCaskill's going to be in good shape. It doesn't matter what ads they run against her. Conversely, if Trump's approval ratings are around the 50s, I think that Holly or whatever Republican candidate has a really good chance.
Trump's approval ratings are around the 50s?
Yeah,
if
right
they're now, around the 50s?
Well, yeah, in Missouri.
In Missouri, like it fluctuates now, but I think he's hovering around 50%.
And yeah, this is I've been hearing between high 40s and 50.
And Joe mentioned the suburbs. Like, I doubt that Trump is doing very well in parts of St. Louis County or Jackson County. The bigger question I have is, how is he doing in other suburbs like Jefferson County, St. Charles County, Buchanan County, Clay County? If he's doing well there, then I would argue that Holly's in a good position, because those are places that McCaskill won pretty decently in 2006 when she ran against Jim Talent.
Yeah. Marshall, do you sense any support or sentiment in favor of eliminating the death penalty in Missouri? I understand there is some talk about that, an attempt to do that.
I would say among Republican leaders, that's probably a non-issue. I don't see any strong indication from the GOP to eliminate the death penalty. It's at least here in Jefferson City, among those who are elected to come up here, that's still pretty much there's been no major shift among GOP leaders regarding the death penalty, and so any chance to eliminate it would go nowhere.
I do want to add, though, that for a number of years, there has been a bipartisan coalition of legislators that have been opposed to the death penalty. A lot of Catholic Republican legislators have often filed bills to put a moratorium or a study on the death penalty. So I want to just emphasize that this is one of the issues that probably has not reached critical mass in Missouri, but it's not one that I think is actually as partisan as people think. It's just that there are so many Republicans, and if a majority of them support the death penalty, it's going to remain in place.
What about other issues, Joe, related to crime? Is there anything outstanding there that you see?
Well, and Jason probably can say this better than I can, but I think some of the – there may be some fallout from the Stockley protests of a few months ago. There may be some renewed efforts on measures that didn't get passed after the Ferguson unrest. Protesters, their whole point was they want to make police more accountable. On the other hand, you have some police who say, well, they want to tie our hands too much. That debate got started shortly after Ferguson, but a lot of stuff didn't happen. And so the Stockley protests in part fed into the frustration because no changes had been made. There may be some efforts to, again, like try to bolster the case for using special prosecutors, especially since Senator McCaskill is now saying she's not opposed to the idea. So there may be some discussion about it, but I'm not sure if there's going to be much movement on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the Missouri legislature is the best venue to accomplish a lot of these goals anyways. I think one of the benefits for people that protested after the Stockley verdict is that St. Louis City is a fairly – I mean, it's not a fairly Democratic city. It's a very Democratic city. And I think that St. Louis Mayor Lyda Crewson has publicly expressed a desire to follow through on a number of initiatives of the Ferguson Commission, especially as it relates to law enforcement. And she has control over the St. Louis Police Department. She could do a lot of these things without passing a single bill. And I think that provides a more optimistic pathway to success than expecting a very conservative, largely rural legislature to pass policy changes for the St. Louis area.
Marshall, what's your take on that? Given the inertia, if you will, that occurred following Ferguson, do you agree with Joe that the Stockley protests could awaken new enthusiasm for legislation?
Well, it might awaken new enthusiasm for legislation that's pro-police, especially among some of the rural lawmakers. As far as anything that would promote or advance the original Ferguson agenda, I don't see that going very far. It might get as far as floor debate, but winding up on Greitens' desk, I would say highly unlikely.
Jason, see anything on the health care, health issue front?
I think that legislators need to find a permanent solution to the in-home care situation. As I think Joe alluded to, the budget that was signed into law meant that thousands of low-income and elderly Missourians lost access to government-paid in-home care service. And I think that there was a bipartisan consensus that they wanted to find a solution to that when the legislature reconvened. I think that will be top of mind. I think ultimately, though, from a more broad perspective, especially after 2018 is over, it may be a good time for the Republican legislators to reassess how restrictive it is for low-income people to get health care in Missouri. It's been almost 15 years, maybe a little bit less, since the Medicaid cuts of 2005. I think it might be a good time to reexamine the impact on the working poor and the poor of the state of that decision. And maybe when we're past this election cycle and when the debate over the Affordable Care Act is now well into the past, it could be a good opportunity to reevaluate that entire situation. Will it succeed? I have no idea.
I think one of the things that's being shown by this latest battle is that a lot of the low-income elderly and disabled live in rural Missouri. It's not just urban. Mm-hmm. And I think the unfair stereotypes of, you know, people who get these services or need these services, I think some legislators, rural legislators, their eyes are starting to get open because they're hearing from their constituents. They're hearing from these rural hospitals. As I mentioned several years ago, there are a few rural mm-hmm. hospitals that are closing. And for many of these counties, rural counties, it's the school district and the hospital that are the major employers, major generator of money, major services providers. And I think that's something that is on lawmakers' minds, because if these elderly, I mean, there's been projections over how many would be affected, all the way to 8,000 or 10,000. Some say it's less. But the bottom line is, in many cases, these people could end up in nursing homes. And under the Medicaid restrictions, that could actually end up costing the state more. I mean, that's one of the reasons they had these programs to begin with, because they were considered cheaper.
Yeah. Marshall, what about the opioids, the opioid epidemic?
Well, as we all know, there is now a prescription drug monitoring program in Missouri due to an executive order signed last year by the governor. Now, that's a fairly limited program, and there will be some bills with an attempt to either tweak it or to affect how it works, how it operates. I don't know if we'll see the fever pitched battle that we saw last year between House Republicans and some Senate Republicans over the creation of one, but I would imagine there would be some attempts to make some changes to the existing one. I know that the House Democratic leader, Gail McCann-Beatty, has basically said that this particular program hasn't really done anything yet and doesn't have much effect yet. So I think we might see some efforts in that regard. I think we may see some more individual bills that might be designed to help people who are experiencing overdoses or who are having a hard time getting off of opioids and getting off of heroin. So and that would come from both sides of the aisle, perhaps. But I haven't seen all those bills yet. But I would imagine there would be somewhat of a more bipartisan push to at least, you know, do something to address the opioid crisis.
Our time is winding down. I wanted to get to one other issue. It's a big one. It always is. And Jason, I'll start with you on this, and that's the issue of ethics. Mm. The legislature has been reluctant in the past to really put any teeth into legislation.
Well, it depends on whether you think curbing lobbyist gifts or making it harder for legislators to become lobbyists is a big priority. You can make an argument that that doesn't matter as much as the campaign finance system. That's been an argument that many people have been making for a long time. And now that Amendment 2, which placed campaign donation limits for state-based candidates, is in effect, there's pretty bipartisan consensus that that measure has a lot of shortcomings and some ways to get around it. And I think that there may actually be some slight bipartisan consensus on changing campaign finance law. We had a Republican on our podcast, Representative Justin Offerman, who expressed an interest in placing limits on municipal and county candidates, which are currently uncapped under this system. I think there might also be a push to try to make it more difficult for candidates to coordinate with political action committees, because right now it's very easy for that to occur. Bottom line is there's a lot of disagreement in Jefferson City, but I have not found a single Democrat or Republican so far who has told me that Amendment 2 has worked at all. So I think that the question is whether you just leave it in place and let the system be what it is, or try to make it a little bit better.
Very quickly, Joe, anything to add?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a question of how much the governor would go along with this. I mean, the governor, you know, allies and some people close to his staff, you know, operate this nonprofit, a political nonprofit, New Missouri, which does not have to report its donors, how it spends its money, how much it gets. There have been some proposals to at least put a law in place that if such a group operates within the state, they have to report what they're doing within the state. Because other states have that. State of New York, for example.
But that would affect more than just candidate committees. That would also affect nonprofits who are donating to ballot initiatives, too.
Correct. But my bottom line is I'm not sure if the governor is going to be encouraging any of this. That's my point.
Final thought from you, Marshall Griffin. We're going to have to wrap it up. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, just that the dark money issue, I think, will, like last year, be a bigger issue in the Senate than the House, where the governor has made some enemies, most notably Gary Romine and Rob Schoff.
Well, guys, roll up your sleeves. It's time to go to work for the next 4.5 months or so. Thank you so much for being with us. Joe Manis, great to see you again. Thank you for being with us. Jason Rosenbaum, always a pleasure. Marshall Griffin, same to you.
Thank you.
And again, Happy New Year to all of you. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.